This is the morning brief from the Economic Times.
Trigger warning. This episode discusses self-harm and mentions suicide.
No one really knows all the sacrifices that you make just to be good.
How many 23-year-old four-time Grand Slam winners do you know who can deal with their inner demons this candidly for everyone to hear?
I think the amount of attention that I get is kind of ridiculous. So long I've tied winning to my worth as a person. To anyone that would know me, they know me for being a tennis player. So like, what am I if I'm not a good tennis player?
Naomi Osaka is not an exception. In fact, players like her have given a wake-up call to everyone. Speaking out about mental health or encouraging other athletes to do the same, making it mainstream. So here's another instance just from this Tuesday, from the Tokyo Olympics. Simone Biles, the greatest gymnast that America has ever produced.
Yeah, I say put mental health first, because if you don't, then you're not going to enjoy your sport and you're not going to succeed as much as you want to. So it's okay sometimes to even sit out the big competitions to focus on yourself, because it shows how strong of a competitor and person that you really are.
It's unprecedented that these top of the league sports icons are ready to face the consequences when they come out and put self before success, mind over medal, often at great individual or professional costs. I'm sure you will agree it wasn't easy for Naomi Osaka to want the press to back off or leave her alone during a French Open.
This morning, the world's number two seed is out after being threatened with expulsion and suspension if she continued to skip press conferences. Naomi Osaka has withdrawn from the French Open. In a candid statement on social media, the 23-year-old shared she had suffered long bouts of depression since the U.S. Open in 2018.
Or for Simone Biles, for that matter, to sit out of competition bang in the middle of an Olympics.
The 24-year-old gymnast opened up to the Today Show on Tuesday after she left the competition floor with the Team USA medical trainer following her first rotation on the vault of the women's team final at the Tokyo Olympics.
Today has been really stressful. I was just like shaking, could barely nap. I've just never felt like this going into a competition before, and I tried to go out here and have fun and warm up, but then once I came out here, I was like, no, mental is not there, so I just need to let the girls do it and focus on myself. Be a little bit better to take a back seat, work on my mindfulness, and I didn't want to risk the team a medal for kind of my screw-ups.
Did you notice these players are walking away from the arena, yet people are actually applauding for them? Well, most of them are. We will ignore the bullies and the dinosaurs who find them weak, a silly excuse to justify bad performance. It's Friday, 30th of July. From the Economic Times, I'm Arijit Barman. This is the Morning Brief. In today's episode, I will be chatting with an Indian Olympian medal winner and a sports psychologist to figure out if women athletes like Naomi and Simone are showing us a new way. Are athletes, even in India, like our cricketers Robin Uthappa or swashbuckling captain Virat Kohli, finally accepting that they are not products, but people? Remember, products can be replaced. People, not that easily.
I've gone through a phase in my career where I felt like it was the end of the world. You know, in England 2014, I just didn't know what to do, what to say to anyone, how to speak, how to communicate. You never know how that's taken. I think these things should be respected and not taken in a negative way at all, which I think can happen to any person.
But hang on. Hasn't elite sport or the Olympics always been an arena to showcase human excellence, a quest for the summit, pushing boundaries, sacrifices for something higher? aren't the games all about winning and losing? One that brings fame, fortune, and fans right to your doorstep? Let me turn to Olympian shooter and bronze medalist at the 2012 London Games, Gagan Narang, to understand what goes inside an Olympian's head. Thank you very much, Gagan, for taking time out and discussing this very important topic with the Morning Brief. You know, first of all, most of us from the outside cannot really understand or relate to what's going on inside the head of, say, a Simone Biles or in Naomi Osaka, the pressure that's building or that has been building inside. You perhaps can, because you've been there, participated in several Olympics, you've done that. Can you please help us understand?
There is a lot of expectations when you're going in as a favorite. All eyes are on you. And high performance sport is very different from normal life because the stakes are very high. And I think most of the athletes who are at the Olympics want to go out there and fight against all odds and prove everyone else wrong, including themselves. Sometimes self-doubt creeps in. So, you know, sometimes your body and mind is not in sync. And that is probably what must have happened with Naomi and Simone. Having said that, tennis is very different from gymnastics and shooting. So I'm sure they have their own set of issues to deal with.
No, that's true. You know, even for you, after winning the Olympic bronze, and that was not your first attempt, I think it was your third, if I'm not mistaken, you actually came out of the shooting range and you said, finally, I've got the monkey off my back. What did you mean by that? Who or what is that monkey you were referring to?
Well, I was 21 years old when I shot my first Olympics. I was probably the youngest athlete in the Indian contingent in 2004 in Athens.
Correct.
So it was a kid in a toy store kind of a moment for me, where you have these so many things happening around you, the whole aura of the Olympics. It was my first games. And I shot an 8.9 in my 40th shot or in my 40th series, which kind of threw me out of contention in my first Olympics. So, of course, at that point of time, a lot of people said, no problem, it's your first Olympics, you know. And in the second Olympics, I left no stone unturned. I worked very hard. Of course, I became world number one in 2006. I shot 4 Commonwealth Games gold medals. I had Asian Games medals. I won World Cup medals. So the first World Cup gold medal in my event ever was won in 2006. And I was a favorite going into Beijing at that point of time. When I finished the pre-Olympic World Cup, I shot a bronze medal in the same range that we competed the Olympics in Beijing. And everything was set. I mean, I was well prepared and I wanted to go out there and win a medal. But again, the 40th shot of the fourth series, I shot another 8.9. And I finished with a score.
But you missed by a whisker in the end, I remember.
I finished with a score of 595 out of 600. And there were 5 more people at the same score. And I missed a medal. I missed going into the final, I would say. And I was the 5th and I was out of the final. So it was a heartbreak for me. And of course, it was very difficult for me to handle. People almost wrote me off. They said he can't do it anymore. There were a lot of doubts that were created for me. They were like, you know, he's not serious and whatnot. I mean, everything that can be thrown at you when the chips are down was thrown at me.
Even I remember there were some people who went to the extent of body shaming, saying he's more interested in, you know, he's not serious enough. I mean, the weight became a very big issue. You know, there were so many factors that people started throwing at you as excuses.
Well, anything and everything. I mean, anything and everything was thrown at you. And it was a very difficult time for me. And more difficult because when I came back home, my mom was actually in the hospital and they didn't actually tell me that she was admitted for the last 1 week while I was shooting my competition. So she, out of shock, had high diabetes and high sugar and she was immediately admitted to the hospital and it took time. And so having said that, you know, it was a very difficult time. Pain, and there was a lot of pain. I would have sleepless nights. I would sweat in the night because of of shivering and the kind of demons that were haunting me, that how could you miss, how did that 8.9 happen in Athens?
Correct.
Never,
correct.
Never in between. And at a crucial juncture in Beijing, again, I shot an 8.9. And it was difficult because the moment I would get
correct.
Sleep, that shot would come into in front of my mind and I would wake up. And it was very, very hard and very, very difficult. But then my coach quickly put me into a regime that, you know, okay, now it's gone, it's done and dusted. I didn't feel like touching my gun. I hated the sport for a week at least.
It's understandable. Yeah.
But I hated people around me because everyone would question me, my parents. Arey, kya hua Gagan ko? What happened? What did he do? You know, and we don't get to hear about him anymore. What? So, you know, these are the pressures that happened externally on you.
Correct. To an athlete.
And then you start.
And Indians are not mentally tough. I mean, that's another thing that keeps people.
You know, he won a competition before the Olympics. What happened to him in the Olympics? So then I got back to my mental trainer and we kind of started working back, collecting firewood to light the fire. And then finally, 15 days later, the fire was lit and I wanted to perform again. There was World Cup final in October, November in 2008 in Bangkok. And that was my next target. And this time, I didn't have my coach with me. He was, of course, post-Olympics at home, taking a break while I was training for the World Cup final. And that is where I went and shot a 600 out of 600 and a world record and kind of vindicated myself and my stand that, you know, I am here and I am back. And it was a very...
And that it continued, I mean, till London 2012, where you actually won the medal.
Yeah, there was no looking back. And 2008, I won the World Cup final with a record, world record score of, I set two world records, the qualification world record I equaled, because it can't get better than 600. And then I did the finals world record. But the London situation, I will tell you, was very, very interesting because I couldn't give another shock to my parents. I would tell my parents that, you know, don't expect a medal from me because, and at the same time, I had the hunger and desire to win. So there was almost like a conflict in my mind where I wanted to win, but I'm telling my parents that it's okay, I'm not going to win. And mentally, it actually was quite draining. So of course, I had to upskill myself, build up my mental reserves accordingly. And then went into London and I told myself that when I shot that 40th shot, I mean, it took me 5 minutes to shoot that shot. And I said, look, it happened twice to you. It cannot happen this time. And you have to nail it. And it took me 5 minutes to calm my nerves down. My heart was racing faster than a probably F1 car. I mean, it was at 140, 150 beats per minute. And when I shot that 40th shot over 10.7, I kind of, you know, was relieved that, okay, now this thing is out. And
so the monkey finally got off your back.
Yeah, so I was an Olympic finalist then, and then in the finals, of course, I won the medal. And then that monkey which was riding on me of that 8.9 and that disaster happening finally was off my back, and that's how the performance in 2012 came.
Interestingly, even Abhinav, I remember, he said right after winning, and when people said, what's your first reaction, he said, I want to pee. I mean, that's one hell of a quote, you know, winning a medal and then saying, you know, I just want to pee. So that, I mean, perhaps it shows that how much stress an athlete has to endure. So much is bottled up within oneself for so long.
Well, yes, I think it's the nature of the sport. It's all about control, and it's not like cricket, or it's not like badminton where you can show aggression into a smash or a drive. Or hit the sticks or hit the ball out of the park, and kind of the energy is flowing outwards. Here, the energy is wanting to burst out, but you're trying to control it. You know, so it takes every bit of energy in your body to kind of control and keep everything internal. And under this stressful situation, you still have to squeeze the trigger and aim at a target which is half a millimeter at 10 meters.
Tell me, we as Indians, that extra onus that ideally we should on developing our mental strength?
When you see a lot of difficult situations in life, you generally, of course, develop a lot of mental strength. Now, if you see the stories of Manu Bhakar, or if you see the stories of Saurabh, they have come through very difficult times. It's not been a cakewalk for them. Of course, after they have reached a certain level, there is government support, there is federation support, there is private sponsorships coming in. But of course, everything comes with experience, and these kids have the experience that they need. Of course, it was not enough. I always say that, you know, experience is like a sharp knife. You have to always keep it sharp, otherwise it gets blunt if you don't keep using it. And that's why we shoot a lot of matches in the lead up to the Olympic Games, so that, you know, the pressure handling capability or your knife is sharp when you go into the Olympic Games.
Tell me, all these years, like from one Olympic, one Asian Games, Commonwealth, to the next, you know, it's a routine. You wake up, practice, you know, focus on physical, mental training. It's, you keep doing it. Then one fine day, I mean, you win a medal, then boom. What happens after that? How do you stay motivated? Or is just a void?
See, motivation is definitely something that drives you. I mean, you need to have a mango up on the tree to climb the tree. And, you know, you need to be willing to sacrifice everything for the prize. And once you win the Olympic Games or you win an important competition, of course, you feel relieved. But it, the system coming back doesn't accept you. You know, when you come back to your home, of course, people are very happy about you. But to get back into normal life, it is a challenge. And that is one struggle that we everyone faces, especially when they retire or they come out of sport. Of course, if you have the next goal set before you even win, that kind of motivates you to perform even further.
But you are also thinking of your academy, you know, thinking beyond just, you know, active competition. You are also planning between that London and Rio period.
You know, shooting as a sport for me was a way of life.
Yeah.
And when I was not shooting, I was thinking about the sport when I was sleeping, when I was waking up. And I started my academy before the Olympics and not after the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Because I was training on the range and I saw so many kids and so many people wanting to do well after 2010. And,
correct,
you know, I didn't have an answer to give to them. And that's when I started at the Gun for Glory Shooting Academy in 2011. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people said, oh, he's distracted. He started an academy. He won't win a medal. I just didn't worry or bother about what they were saying, because for me, being on the range was the most important thing. I would train all day, and then I would probably help kids. And by helping kids, you know, it kind of reiterated the basics to me as well, which kind of helped me in my training.
Correct.
So yeah, I was lucky that way that I won a medal. But if I didn't win a medal, these were the few demons that I had to encounter on my way back.
True. And lots of these youngsters, the other thing I wanted to ask you, because this is very real, that many of them, you know, and in number of sports, they're becoming super successful, both in from a sporting point of view as well as from a commercial point of view, pretty early on in their lives. Look at cricket, thanks to IPL, so many young millionaires. I also noticed that their life revolves around Instagram stories, social media. But you have seen up close how all this can quickly spiral out of hand. So is there a warning signal somewhere here?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, when we were shooting, you know, these social media wars or games were not very popular. And this for likes, yeah, race for likes and followers was not very popular. And that is also one reason why athletes today with less number of achievements are more popular than people who have a lot of achievements.
Correct.
In life. Personally, I sacrificed a lot of followers and was off social media for 10 months before the Olympics and off public functions and social functions. In fact, this is the first time that I'm actually watching the Olympic Games, because the rest of the four times I was participating and I didn't know what was happening.
Correct.
But I was speaking to Gopi Chand also yesterday, and he was like, Gagan, I'm also for the first time watching the Olympics.
Watching it,
so,
yeah, correct.
Yeah, and not being in it.
Tell me, Gagan, is it extra difficult if you're a male athlete? Because there is always this notion that, you know, A, there is, of course, this notion that athletes are like gods. They don't crack. And on top of that, if you're a male athlete, you just can't cry. The alpha quotient simply takes a beating if you do that.
Well, yes, of course. See, traditionally also, you know, the male in our
society,
culture, in our society and culture, is someone that has a role of a provider and not a receiver. So, you know, it is difficult for a lot of them to kind of understand that the provider can have problems. For a male athlete, definitely difficult. I mean, everyone has their own tough times and their own tough situations. And the motto of this Olympics was gender equality.
But you're saying that it's about equality, it's about change. But you must have seen the kind of some reactions that, you know, Naomi received, or even now Simone is receiving. Some people are calling the athletes weak. It's an excuse of bad performance. You say you give mental health an excuse. So for many people, it is still, you know, what's really going on. They just can't comprehend what mental health is about.
Well, yeah, it's. I think the situation is unprecedented. And I think it is something that will be a challenge to address coming forward.
But it's a positive change, that people are saying.
Yes, definitely. I mean, voicing out your opinions, of course, definitely. And I think that there will be some protocols. And remember, Arijit, there are always two sides of a coin. So if you win, then everything is good. And if you don't win or you pull out, then you have more negatives than positives.
And the last thing I wanted to ask you, that from your experience, you talked about vulnerability in among athletes. What's the worst that you've seen, that things really going out of hand?
I mean, it can get really bad. There was a time when everything that I would do didn't happen the way I wanted to do or wanted to be. I mean, you know, it is very easy to kind of shut yourself to the world. And these are not one or two days, they are weeks and months together that you don't talk to anyone. You can't share because nobody has seen that stress or that elite. I mean, your parents can't help you.
Indeed, it seriously can go down a slippery slope to absolute nothingness real fast.
Win or lose, I've felt a dramatic emptiness.
We're just so lost. A good 80%, maybe more, go through some kind of post-Olympic depression. I thought of myself as just a swimmer and not a human being. That's where I was just like, why don't I just end it all?
Did you, in your wildest dream, ever think Michael Phelps, the greatest Olympian ever with 28 medals, would actually think of? Let's rewind and listen to him again.
I thought of myself as just a swimmer and not a human being. That's where I was just like, why don't I just end it all?
Why do champions think of such extremes? Because in life, they have only one focus.
I knew it was the biggest stage that I would perform for in my life.
For Olympians, that's what defines you.
Athletes have worked their entire lives for this moment. Everything revolves around this sole focus, and that sole focus is the Olympics.
It doesn't matter if you're a soccer player or a sprinter or a shooter or even a swimmer, a javelin thrower or a judoka. If you are in any elite sport, your life will get defined in a heartbeat. But what happens after the gold? What? So I asked Vaibhav Agashe, a sports psychologist, a mental trainer with Indian Olympian contingent, with over 14 years of experience, who helps players to deal with performance anxiety, stress, and even depression if mental health issues manifest differently in different sports.
Yes, they do. Different sports have different format of competition. So the athletes have to withstand different types of pressure or in different situations in a match. Uh-huh. Some sports require an aggression on the part of the athlete. If you see any kind of one-on-one sports, If you think of wrestling or boxing, these are combat sports. Mm-hmm. In these sports, the athletes have to be aggressive. Of course, these are technical also. So you have to remember the technique in mind and try and score point. If you look at sports like tennis, badminton, even table tennis, these are again highly technical sports. And as you said, they also require a lot of stamina. Mm-hmm. In fact, in these Olympics, you are seeing the conditions are very hot in Tokyo. And a lot of players, particularly in tennis, are struggling to cope up in those situations. So it really tests one endurance. And in sports like shooting, it is really about controlling the small muscles and small movements. You don't see much of a movement of shooters except just picking up the gun. And they have to just control the trigger finger. So in that case, if heart is beating too fast, then it's very difficult to control the muscles.
While listening to you, I was just wondering, where does the body ends and the mind begins? Because endurance, for a normal person, all this seems very physical manifestation, not so much a mental.
It's a mix of both, actually, because the anxiety and the stress always manifests itself in a physical format. Mm-hmm. In the head, it could be different feelings for different persons. In some cases, it could be just like a flood of thoughts and you're unable to control your thinking. It could be a lot of negative thoughts coming into the mind or doubts about your capability. Physically, the head temperature, if you actually look at the skull temperature, it can be very high. So the head actually can become very hot. Or like you can see someone's face going completely red under the competition. The temperature could be literally 10 degrees higher than the normal temperature.
It's interesting that you say all this because I had no idea that there is such a thing called a skull temperature.
Usually we say that someone is hot-headed, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So that actually corresponds to the, you know, the temperature. If you measure it on the forehead or the temples, the temperature is actually higher. And there is a reason for that, because all thinking requires energy. And when so much of energy is being spent in the brain, the temperature really goes up. So these are actually physical manifestations. So apart from, let's say, just the forehead and temples, sweaty hands, or hands turning cold is also physical manifestation of stress. If you actually measure the finger temperatures, it normal finger temperature could be somewhere around 91 to 94 degree Fahrenheit. And under stress, it can go as low as 65 degree Fahrenheit. Hands become very cold.
Wow.
So there is a physical change.
Wow, that's really, really an eye-opener. I understand you say the different sports, the manifestations different, but are there common triggers that binds all of them?
What I have described so far, I wouldn't call it exactly like a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. It is a normal response to stress. As long as you're responding positively to the stress, things are under control. It is only when the things are not under control, that's when the problems begin. So it's not like that some world champion who's going to win a medal and who actually performs really well does not have pressure. He or she also has same kind of pressure. They also have butterflies in the stomach, heartbeat goes up. So that's completely normal. It's just that if the stress goes beyond a particular threshold and a person feels that he is or she is not able to cope up with it, that's when it can get into that side of something which is not normal or something which is excessive. It can lead to a lack of motivation.
Correct.
Person feeling burnt out as a result of that. And then the extreme manifestation can be depression.
It's very similar to our lives and our stresses. I see a tremendous similarity.
Absolutely. I think you're right there. It is not unique to sports. It's a common everyday experience. That's why most of us find it difficult to keep work and life completely separate.
Separate. That's why every now and then you keep hearing this work-life balance. But of course, in sports, the stakes are far, far, far higher, I guess.
So that is also then becomes a part of counseling and training, that don't take your sports issues or your training, whatever happens in the training, leave it on the ground and don't take it back to the home.
So tell me, in India, are we sensitive enough about these things, or are we waking up too late?
I would say that in India, the awareness has gone up quite a lot mm-hmm. in the last decade or so. And I will say that we are not too late, but yes, a lot more effort needs to be put into this particular area. I was associated with shooting a long time back. It was one of the first organizations to have a mental trainer way back in 2004 or 2005. Also, one of the reasons was that that particular sport was like really doing well even in those times. And our athletes were actually at a world level. And the mental training and the mental aspects are important, and everybody was aware of that. But yes, I see that many other sports where these aspects were not really, you know, considered important. The coaches were not aware of it. And anyone who's struggling in competition, they used to stigmatize them and, you know, they used to come down harshly on them. And they were not really sensitive.
Yes, because I remember both Abhinav Bindra as well as Gagan Narang openly talked about stress, mental well-being, you know, being at the right headspace over and over again. So you're right, shooting or shooters have been definitely far more conscious. But I just want to understand your typical engagement with an athlete. These are what, like it works from one Olympic cycle to the other, or it's actually a lifelong commitment and engagement for you and the athlete?
Ideally, I would say it needs to be like a lifelong commitment. May not be to a specific trainer, but being aware and committed to mental training is very, very important. And it needs to be really an integral part of athletes' training and the development over the years. So talking to a mental trainer is like talking to a person who's neutral and independent. And it's a process of debriefing after each competition, looking at your own self, what you did right, what you did was not correct.
Very much like a sounding board for an athlete.
Absolutely. Sounding board for the athlete. And ultimately, because I don't teach or I don't train anyone, the individual is training himself. I'm just a facilitator right path.
But tell me, Vaibhav, do athletes come to you as individuals, or do, you know, associations or the Sports Authority of India, you know, they come to you and it's like an omnibus kind of an engagement for, say, all the runners, all the, you know, wrestlers, or it's an individual effort, an individual ex coming to you and say, hey, Vaibhav, can you help me out?
It's mostly the case of the individual coming up to me, and then he's trying to, you know, improve on the mental aspects of the game. The other organizations like Sports Authority of India, federations, they act more like facilitators. So even when they engage a mental trainer or a sports psychologist, they make the person available to the athletes or to the whole team.
Shouldn't it be the other way around? Shouldn't the moment an athlete right at the young age gets going, begins training, physical as well as mental training should come together?
I think the challenges in India are because currently the number of practitioners in this particular field are quite limited. So it needs to be like made available systematically. And in some sports, it is definitely happening. But in most sports, as I said, number of professionals are limited and the engagements are many times very, very sporadic. Yes. Before, let's say, important competitions like Commonwealth Games, suddenly, you know, the psychologist will be called in the camp to interact with the athletes.
Yeah.
But now the real work needs to be done now, far away from the Olympics, 4 years away from the Olympics, or even 8 years away from the Olympics. So before the competition, there should not be any requirement for intervention.
How serious can these mental health issues become for an athlete if it spirals out of hand?
See, I think post-Olympic depression, now everyone is becoming aware of it. Even if you're successful also, after that, it's a phase of depression after such a big event, because you suddenly run out of goals. And also for someone who's been at a fourth position or fifth position, missing out the medal by a whisker, there's a huge gap between the third and the fourth place.
True.
One is a recognition and so much of money and fame, and the option is just oblivion. Everyone just forgets you.
Correct.
It is very difficult to deal with that. And of course, the extreme cases are where they're depressed for life, and that depression actually, you know, results in family issues, alcoholism, and the person completely whiling away the life. So far, we have just talked about one aspect, but I think the career aspect is also very, very important. When you're young and maybe even your early 20s or mid-20s, you're suddenly running out of a very important career option. And you're not really studied or you have not acquired a skill.
There's only one goal. Sports. Yeah.
Yes. So in fact, in countries like USA, Australia, I have interacted with the mental health setup, the counseling of the athletes, even transitioning them out of sports is also considered very, very important. And they have a very structured program that how to debrief the athletes after the Olympics or anyone who's about to retire, giving them opportunities about further education or helping them get a job or helping them acquire a skill which can give them another profession.
Or you become entrepreneurs, you open academies and give back to the sports that's given so much to you.
Yes. If this transitioning is handled very well, then the chances of lifelong scars or the long-term mental health issues that we are talking about, there is a lesser chance of them arising.
Once out of sport, athletes get lost, for the field is home and purpose. Sometimes injury plays a role, for when the body fails, self-worth leaks away and purpose erodes, as if an entire existence has drained away. By the way, we all play a role in this, for athletes become conditioned to see themselves as nothing else but just that, athletes. They have no other hobby, no fallback plan, many of them don't even finish school or learn a second skill. The young get swayed by sport, but often are not trained how to deal with life's curveballs. That only a few win. That it won't last. That you will be dropped. That winning doesn't guarantee long-lasting happiness. From the outside in, we only see the glam, the glitter, the muscles, the medal. While in their pursuit of passion, perfection, and perseverance, athletes are not trained to talk about their weaknesses. Till one day, it finally cracks open the facade. Thankfully, Simone Biles, Naomi Osaka, Virat Kohli, and many others are speaking out. Okay, not to be okay. It's only human. We also must listen, not judge. I'm Arjun Barman, and you've been listening to The Morning Brief. This episode was edited and coordinated by Anjali Venugopalan. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. We look forward to your feedback. Write to us at themorningbrief@timesgroup.com. And if you like this episode, please share on your social media handles. We'd really appreciate it. The Morning Brief drops every Tuesday, Thursdays, and Friday. Thank you for listening and have a nice day. Goodbye and good luck. And have a great weekend. All edited sound clips used in this episode belongs to their respective owners. Credits mentioned in the description.